Hi, this is Steve from Staten Island, and you're listening to the Hood Rat Recap Podcast.
Gemini genuflex and says a Hail Mary for his money on the Monday night game. The girl in the sequins let him buy her a sea breeze, but he still don't think she's using her real name. Me, I'm on the border with my back in the corner, the way it's been since we closed out the war. I've seen this whole scene play out here before. The Gemini flying high till he screams when he sees what the score is.
We got bored, so we started a podcast about the best bar band in the land, man. This is the Hood Rat Recap, and we are back. We are your steady stream of the unified scene, all the news and reviews of the band that you love, we love, and they got some brand new songs, but we all know that their most famous song ever was The Bear and the Maiden Fair, according to Spotify and Apple Music. And why would big streaming lie to us? They would never lie to us, would they? Hello, everybody. This is Stage Right Mike on the mic, and I can talk hold steady all night. And when I like to talk hold steady heavy, I like to throw up the rat signal. And just like that, the Hood Rat Pack has assembled. First of all, I can see the unified scene's very own King of Queens, Gasper. Casper, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Mike. But you know what? I've been trying to get people to call me John Wick.
Oh, why is that, Casper?
Because I'm a straight-up killer.
You know your microphone's on when you do these, right? How's that working out for you, Casper?
Not so good. Not so good at all, actually. People keep calling me Ted Theodore Logan.
This is a totally deep hole.
Yeah! Now what?
I don't know.
I mean, just when they can't get anywhere. First off, you sacrilege John Wick, and you sacrilege Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And John Wick dies in the last one. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it. I can just wait for the day that these die as nice and sweetly as John Wick dies at the end of John Wick 4. Because I just they don't get any better. And as Mike just said, your mic is on. Like, I think you sometimes think you're just talking to us. But this is the show. People hear this shit that comes out of your mouth.
But yet they love it.
Somebody loves it.
And that's the sound of our third mic and our producer, Kevin is whatever. Kevin, how you doing?
I am... will be better. Sorry, I'm letting that one process. It's like when you eat bad fish, just makes you nosh. But otherwise, we're good. We have a few things to sort of get into. We had a couple of songs come out. The official release of Death of a Punchline and Radar and Lita. We mentioned it last time, too, that the children's book is coming. I think Mike has some info on some comments we got on the children's book, didn't you, that you said you saw, Mike?
So, yeah, I know the Facebook group was kind of having fun with converting Hold Steady songs into children name songs. And we got one from Jim667. So we asked about the children's book, what would be some good song titles? And he came up with Holly Was a Rug Rat.
That's pretty good.
And Stuck Between PlayStations. So very well done, Jim667. I thought those are pretty good.
That is a good one. I like the PlayStations one.
And so that book comes out in October, I believe. I don't know if the pre-order is still available. I did buy one because, of course, I did. Did you guys get the book?
Yep, I got one coming.
Nice.
I just figured I'd come over and read it to Jackson when it shows up. Or I'll read it to you when it comes to your house. Because since I don't have any kids and my puppies don't like when I read to them, I'll just come over and read it to you, and that'll be how I get to experience the Hold Steady book.
And, you know, we got some other fan response. So Dave from KC wrote into us. Mike, why don't you tell him what he said?
Yeah, so Dave actually did what we always requested. He sent us in a voicemail. Somehow the voicemail got messed up, and I just got a blank message. So he sent in an email. Dave from KC says, "Hey, Mike, we only get bits and pieces of the lives of Holly, Gideon, Sapphire, Charlemagne, and others. They seem like such interesting characters that I'd like to know the whole story. I wonder if there is any well-written fan fiction about this group of characters. Dave from KC, a 12-year fan of the band and a 1-year fan of the Hood Rat Recap. So we really appreciate that, Dave, for being a fan. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, absolutely.
About this question of fan fiction. I think you've actually said it before, Gasper.
Yes. I mean, I went looking to see what was out there. And to be honest, there isn't much. There's the old message boards. There's definitely some arguments about what was going on in the songs. And of course, there's Clicks and Hisses, which we have varying opinions on Clicks and Hisses. I think that overall they do a great job, but there's spots where we disagree, which kind of is where the fun is at. What you think happened in these songs, because there is no definitive answer. I don't think Craig's ever really weighed in on this is exactly what happened and the time order that it happened. But it's something I've played with for sure. Maybe we can get some people to write in or call in with their theories on what they think the storyline is. So basically between Almost Killed Me, Separation Sunday, Boys and Girls in America, and I think you have to include Stay Positive, although some will argue that you don't. What do you think the story is? So if you guys want to tell us a bit about what you think the story is amongst those records, like write into our email at thehoodratrecap@gmail.com. Or Mike, where could they leave us a voicemail?
You can leave a voicemail right on the show notes. There's a little link. Just click it and speak into your phone and you will hear your lovely voice on the next episode.
I mean, this is like your wet dream of a question right here, Gasper, because this might as well be as close to the Oak Tag and Red Lines and Thumbtacks that you've been trying to get us to do.
I mean,
for ages.
I have my thread and Thumbtacks and Oak Tag ready. Whenever you guys are, we can tackle this. But let's kick it to the fans and see what they have to say first.
I can't wait for you to read your fan fiction story. Next episode, everybody, here's a preview. Gasper, the King of Queens, is going to have a fan fiction story handwritten by himself. He used to run a college newspaper, so this is the moment he's waited for to write a story that possibly the Hold Steady will hear on this show.
That's a scary, scary thought.
Stay tuned.
So in other stuff, while we're on the topic of the Facebook groups and all that.
Is it bad that I'd rather listen to your fan fiction than your Freddie Knuckles? Like, that just says a lot.
Yeah.
But what makes Freddie Knuckles so fun is that how much you hate it. That's the whole point.
I know. Beth and Kat and folks have sort of already alluded to, like, they love the reaction. And I got to say, like, it's painful. Anyway, what are you going to bring up? On to the next topic.
So in league with the Facebook posts and some of the feedback we've gotten, we posted a Facebook post in the positive posting group for our last episode with Martin Fitzgerald, the quizmaster from the UK events. And we came up with three quiz questions of our own, in which if you submit answers to our email, thehoodratrecap@gmail.com, the first three with correct answers, we will send out an official Hood Rat Recap t-shirt. So we were going to read off these questions to give everyone a chance in case you haven't seen the Facebook post. Question one is, where does Craig Finn say he got the line, "This toast is gross," in Unpleasant Breakfast? Question number two is, which character of the Hold Steady lore does Craig infer is possibly trans? And the third question is, Craig Finn says that the band often writes about cities they have never played, and then Destiny will often manifest a show there. Name a city they have written about, but still have never played. So these are all questions that were plucked from the Q&A events that usually happen in Massive Nights. And I mean, I know the answers. Do you guys have any idea on the answer? Don't say them here because we want to give everyone a chance to answer. But
yeah, I forget the exact person that toast is gross with, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. I may know, and honestly, I have a t-shirt, so I can't say it yet. I don't think I could win.
Yeah, we're disqualified because we're employees.
We're disqualified. Although the new t-shirts are very cool, I will say that. Martin is one of the first new t-shirt designs, so good on him. Kind of seem like old astronauts from back in the 50s, floating freely on black and white TVs. A bear on their teeth is so chunk in the ads before movies. I got out of the service and gotten some business. Okay, guys, like I said off the top, we got a couple new songs released. Well, they were released previously on Wax for Record Day, right, at Gasper?
Yeah, it was originally a Record Store Day release, and I think this is around another Record Store day event, but they've also released, in addition to the vinyl, they're releasing digital versions on Bandcamp. So those are out now.
Yeah, and I think that they're also on all the streaming services too. I think if you use Spotify or Apple Music, they're there too. I did see them on Bandcamp for $4.99 for the two of them. That's where I got the two song EP. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they are, like we were talking about, they're on big streaming now. So so it's a lot of, like me, it was the first time hearing Radar and Lita, because there was only a couple vinyl releases in Minnesota, and they were all on the opposite side of Minneapolis, the part of Minneapolis I don't go to, the part that's not called St. Paul. So I didn't get it. I didn't get those. So,
but I thought St. Paul had it all when we called, though.
It they, does. They so why do you ever have to go to Minneapolis? I could have went to South Minneapolis.
Well, they didn't have this record. Yes, that's true. So we get Death of a Punchline and we get Radar and Lita. Death of a Punchline is one that we've heard a few times. I've heard it at the record store event, and I think they played it at Massive Nights. I know they played it at the Weekenders. Have you guys heard it live? I think you have. I think Mike
yes,
has,
I have. Yeah.
I don't think I was at the show they played it at, but I do know that you've talked about it, and it might have even been on one of the Bandcamp releases. I have to go back.
No, it's never been released before this.
Not yet?
No, this is the first time it's being released. And Radar and Lita, I don't think we've ever heard. So this is the first time we're hearing.
I believe
those.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. So let's start off with Death of a Punchline. Like, what'd you guys think?
I think it's a very strong song. I think they said the reason they didn't keep it's a little too upbeat to be on the last album, but I thought it was kind of upbeat. I thought it was a pretty strong song. I thought it was too bad that it didn't get on the album because it had the tie-in. Again, we have betting on Monday night football games here. And this guy's losing at betting on football again. So I thought it had a couple of good tie-ins with the City at 11. So yeah, it had a couple good tie-ins with the album's theme. What do you guys think?
Yeah, they definitely. You could see his head was on sports when he was writing in this time frame, because he the Hail Mary, you assume, is he's betting on football. Later on, we 3 points for the home team. I think we're on to basketball at that point. But I like
no,
this one.
He's still talking football because he says for the money on the Monday night game and 3 points for the home team, that would be the spread of 3 points of the home team was favored by 3 points.
Yeah, that's a gambling term. And
yeah, it's a gambling term.
Betting sports. You know, it's an interesting thing too about this song where, you know, he talks about the hands in the air and flag at half mast on the grapevine, mourning the American dream and the death of a punchline. I was curious when I heard it if the death of a punchline is sort of the sort of weird lens we have to view the world in right now. If you notice, punchlines and jokes and comedians really kind of take a lot of heat almost all the time. Chappelle, we've seen it with Dane Cook and people like that have all kind of had jokes in their catalog that sort of had become a little taboo in this day and age with the new culture and climate. And I was curious if the actual reference of the death of the punchline is sort of the inability of people to take a joke.
Yeah, like the Oscars used to get hosted by Billy Crystal or a comedian. And I don't watch the Oscars anymore because I don't think there's a comedian even hosting it anymore. So,
no. And I remember even like when Kevin Hart did get the opportunity to host the Oscars, which was something he wanted his whole life. Like people went back to his whole shtick from 10 years ago and like brought up some jokes that at the time might've flown, but now don't, and lost the opportunity. So when I heard Death of a Punchline, I was very much like, is he talking about society and the way we kind of just view comedy in general right now? Or is this something else he's just relating with that sort of language?
I think that tracks. Yeah. Especially being that like, so this is your narrator in this song is basically a guy who went and served in the military and is back from war. And, you know, like, You get the idea that maybe even more than just like the death of jokes from a comedian, but just a whole shift in society on you know, what we find appropriate and not appropriate anymore. And he talks about how like in high school, you know, the theme of the prom was banned in D.C. and the last dance was We Gotta Know. Admittedly, I didn't know that reference, but I think Kevin's got the reference on that, right?
Well, it was a Cro-Mag song, We Gotta Know. So it does sort of paint a very interesting thing because an American hardcore song is the final song of a prom. Like, I'd be very surprised if you could find that in this day. And as we sort of look at the overall theme of the song, and it kind of gets into what you're saying now about a person in the military who's coming back, like how different the world is. And then it's over. It's even when the song ends, it's kind of into that same vein of like, here's somebody at a party trying to tell jokes to break ice and
right.
not really sure what to say and what's appropriate, what's okay. Is anybody going to laugh at the death of the punchline? That's kind of where I put it into this scope, but about comedy, but even more so what you were saying, like probably just the overall shift in society and how we look at things in culture right now, as opposed to, you know, the way we did maybe even as recent as 5-10 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. And like Gasper, you can get your red yarn out and pins, because I like the song. Like I was saying, how it connects to everything. He has, he says that he knew met a guy in Fort Jackson when he was in the military. So now he said Pensacola's under his cousin's control. So here we got Pensacola mentioned again. And if we could have got this on the album, you know, we got Perdido Key, which is kind of an outer or greater Pensacola area. So it would have connected that way again too. And then of course we got Pensacola from Almost Killed Me. So, you know, it was mentioned quite prominently in that song. So we get it brought up again. So,
interesting. Yeah. I love what he does with the date too, by the way, just the way he paints the picture with that, his date came in late wearing, it says in the lyrics, wearing clove cigarettes, but I think the line is gloved cigarettes.
No, it's clove cigarettes, which makes sense. Like when somebody smokes clove cigarettes, they might as well be wearing it when they come into a room because
I got you.
Wearing the smell. Yeah.
But like some uptown Dracula debutante, the sketch looked like extras in the set of River's Edge. I love that line. And that's where we get our Freddie Knuckles, by the way, in case anyone didn't get the reference.
Keanu in River's Edge. And then, so we get, has Craig ever said debutante before? And now he says it in this song, and then he also says it in The Birdwatcher. So it's just interesting how these all tie together so much.
Yeah. So now musically, I mean, to me, this song is we're back, like you said, it's more of an anthem, which I feel like we've been missing a little bit. And so that was kind of cool to get. It's live. It definitely comes off. I think they even play it a little more raucously than they do on the record.
I mean, the other thing too about it is it's quintessential Craig lyrics. Like the story is so robust in vision and exposition and story, where it's like, you really kind of have to, I had to listen to her a few times to really pick up on it. I mean, there's even the part where he's talking about, you know, people who made $2 billion playing videos. Like, is he talking about these YouTube streamers that make careers? Or is he talking about the guy who runs Netflix? Like, there's so many references that are just so ambiguous that when you listen to it, you could take it into sort of every way. And that's one of the things Craig does extremely well. And I feel like that's why this song to me is almost like a gem that should have been on the record, because I just feel like it's quintessential Hold Steady and probably to me some of the best that they've done. It's easily the best B-side, I think, in my opinion, that we've had in some time.
Ooh, okay.
You know, the other thing too, it's like, who names a character Gemini? Like, is that the guy's name? Is that his astrological sign? Do we really know? Does it matter?
I mean, I assume you have to think it's a nickname. I mean, because he's already playing with he's buying the girl at the bar a sea breeze, which I always thought it was Bay Breeze, but I guess it's kind of interchangeable name there. But like, he's not even sure if she's using her real name. So like, I think you could say it's a nickname.
Well, this guy, he's into gambling and he's got connections. So it's, I think it's his mob name or his mob call name, probably.
There you go. All right. We got mobster name. We got nickname. We got astrological sign. I'd be curious to know what people think that listen.
And then the other song you mentioned, you know, I'm not a hardcore brain, but when he said band in DC, just the fact that it was DC, I figured it was a Bad Brain song, and I looked it up. It is a Bad Brain song, band in DC.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
All right. So the guitar work on this one, I feel like the solo feels like Steve. I mean, I play that little game when I'm listening to newer Hold Steady songs, like, is this Tad or is this Steve? I feel like this is a Steve solo for sure. Like, what do you guys think?
Yeah.
It's funny because listening Steve to it, I thought it was a Steve solo too, but then every time I think it's Steve, I'm usually wrong. So I just kind of let it go. but I will side with you on that one.
And what's with the first 3 seconds? It starts out like a Frank Sinatra or Sam Cooke song, the first 3 seconds there.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, because they obviously don't ever do that live. So it's almost like, why? I wonder if it's how it would fit into the record if it were to be on the record, if it had something to do with that.
Yeah.
That's next time we get a band member on, we got to ask them that question.
Radar met late on a freight elevator. He made a joke about the fatal attraction.
So what do you think of the other one that most of us were hearing for the first time here, Radar and Lita? What are you guys' thoughts on that?
I went crazy on this. I have theories, so I'm going to let you guys go first. I have some theories on this song.
Well, I will say this. I like the song. It was, I think out of the two, I liked Death of a Punchline better. And it's funny because when I was thinking about it, listening to it, even though it was a digital, it took me back to the old days of the 45 where you would have side A was the main cut. And then side B was like the other tune that was kind of like, and to me, this felt like the other tune. It was easier for me to understand why Radar and Lita didn't make the album per se, as opposed to why Death of the Punchline didn't make it. Gotcha. Not that I didn't like it, but I just said it felt more like a B-side to me on it.
All right. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I guess I agree. I think Death of a Punchline, you could felt like it just barely missed the cut. This one felt like, I think these two songs will end up eventually where they belong to be. I think when they do the 10-year anniversary with the extended songs, these will probably be song 11 and 12 on the extended 10-year anniversary, which is a perfect place for them. It just like, I know I got a text from Gasper when it came out, and he goes, "What happened?" He goes, "What happened on the freight elevator?" And so you're just like Lita. You didn't get the reference about the freight elevator from Fatal Attraction.
I did not. I am not good with movie trivia.
Did you get that connection, Kevin? Did you?
I mean, I caught it right away. You know, because I always listen for their play on words like that. And so when you kind of listen to them enough, any sort of thing that becomes a pop culture reference always feels intentional. And it's funny because when you look at lyrics.com or any of the sites that usually do it, they will capitalize things that are actually songs. On the lyrics.com page for Radar and Lita, Fatal Attraction is not capitalized, but in Apple Music, when you play the song with the lyrics, Fatal Attraction is capitalized. Like, they intentionally wanted it to be the name of the movie on Apple. So I go with that one. I think when he said it right away, my brain right away went to that movie. And then when Gasper sent his text of, "I don't remember the movie," which, you know, at his age, stuff falls out of his brain. But you know, that's a big scene in the movie, is when they meet and have that very illicit sex scene in the freight elevator.
Yeah, we're like Michael Douglas, so we got to see him two movies in a row, Fatal Attraction and Basic Instinct, where his eyes bug out and he gets all sweaty. And I was like, by the end of Basic Instinct, I'm like, okay, I'm good with Michael Douglas sex scenes. I think I'm good for the rest of my life. And unfortunately, I don't think he's had any more since then.
I don't think Catherine Zeta-Jones is ever tired of Michael Douglas's sex scenes, but they're married, so they're supposed to.
Are they still married?
I thought so. Did they split? Do you know something I don't? Because I didn't know she was available.
Mel, better watch out.
Oh, shit. This mic is on, too. This is worse than Freddie Knuckles.
I agree with what your assessment is, it being properly placed on the B side and also probably one of the extras. I do really like the song, but not my favorite Hold Steady song. But that being said, it feels like it. You could definitely tell it was written when Price of Progress was written, because it's got that feel. But does this song feel like the least Hold Steady song of all the Hold Steady songs? And I think I say that mostly because the chorus feels like no other chorus they do. Like, this feels like a real pop song chorus almost. Maybe it's the way he sings it, but it's just what resonated with me is like, wow, this is a weird chorus for a Hold Steady song.
It's weird that you say it's like a Price of Progress timeline. The way these released, you know, getting the two songs, I really had a lot of flashbacks to Thrashing Through the Passion, because how those were released as two songs. So it just gave me a flashback to that time period. But yeah, again, I think that's interesting. Yeah, the chorus does seem a little different. Again, I think this has a lot of tie-ins to The Price of Progress. So interesting that both these songs have somebody that's come back from the military, because it seems like Radar's on edge. His name's Radar, and he's always staring at the door. So I really get the big military. He says he said he falls out of bed with hard dreams in his head, all flashbang and bird songs and skittering insects. So there again, we get kind of a tie back to the bird watchers almost type thing.
I think it's also interesting too. There's the beer reference to Blatt's, which I actually had to look up because I was going to ask you guys that. Yeah, like it's a Milwaukee beer that I looked up, which I had never even heard of. We don't have that in New York. I don't think we ever have. We absolutely have.
Blatt's. So this is the thing, and I've been going back and forth on this.
Nobody drinks Blatt's in New York.
So when he makes a reference like that, I can't help but think, like, look, it's intentional. It's there to place the song in a geographic location. And I initially went for Milwaukee as well because that's where it's brewed. But the thing with Blatt's, it is available here in New York. I think it still is available here in New York. And
You'll have to text me the picture the next time you see Blatt's in any supermarket.
I'm going back to my deli days, like when I used to work up at the corner deli. It wasn't 40 years ago. I'm not that old, Kevin.
40 years ago.
But it is definitely more than 30 years ago. And I remember stocking the shelves, and it was Schlitz and Blatt's and Schaefer were all in the same category. And these were beers that were between $5.99 and $7.99 a case, meaning 4 6-packs in a case. Like, that's how much it would cost for the whole case. So it could be trying to point out that the guy's like frugal or cheap, but I think it places it in Milwaukee. That's my own theory. And if you're ready for theories, I'm ready to go down the rabbit
hole. I mean, the other theory going into that, what you're saying is, though, the next line about that talks about his mattress as a gymnastics mat. So maybe he's just broke.
It could be.
Here's advice I use in real life. We don't get much advice on this show. Whenever you can't break a lease and your manager won't let you break your lease, a lot of my friends will bring me along because I ask them three important questions. I go, number one, how many bee colonies are we allowed to keep in here? Question number two, is the kitchen ceiling tall enough for a vert ramp? And question number three, can we tear out all the carpet and put in wrestling mats? So... Yeah, those three questions will get you out of it.
Remind me not to rent an apartment tonight.
So he's falling out of bed. So we got another guy who's got PTSD from the wars. To your point, you think it's in Milwaukee, but does Milwaukee have freight? Do they have apartments that have freight elevators that were converted over from warehouses? Maybe we'll have to ask Dave. David might know that question.
Milwaukee. The only thing I know about Milwaukee is Laverne and Shirley,
and they worked in a beer factory.
They did.
I don't think it was Blatt's.
So are you ready to go down the rabbit hole of my theories? Because I'm chomping at the bit here. All right.
Okay.
So in tying this song to other songs on the record, do you see Radar and Lita as the antithesis of Sixers? And so here's why I say that, right? In Sixers, you have our character, the female character, is approaching the male character, right? The male character kind of has his life squared away. He's got a good job. He's got the nice apartment, albeit a little square, with his
Sinatra and Nagel prints
on the wall. Yeah, right. The Nagel prints, the music, and all that. And, you know, they have their encounter. They spend some time. They talk throughout the weekend, and they get to know each other. And it doesn't work out, and she goes off on her way, no harm, no foul. In this, you have Radar and Lita, who he does not have his life squared away, right? He's sleeping on a mat. We get the same type feel of the description of his apartment, right? He's sleeping on the mat. She opens up the refrigerator, and there's nothing but mustard and two Blatt's beers out of a six-pack. But they do get together, and it does not go well. And she's almost worse for it, because that she's now in this codependent relationship where it sounds like they both get hooked on drugs, and he's dealing with his PTSD, and it sounds like she's terrified to answer the telephone too for some reason. Do you see a connection to those two songs being like same situation but opposite?
Yeah, I can see these two guys are, I mean, these two guys are different. Radar is like, I almost see him as a Gen X guy who's got PTSD from the wars, and then the other guy in Sixers, I he seems like a guy you could just punch in the nose and he'd leave you alone. So I mean, he's muddling the mints. I mean, what are we doing there? You know, he's got who has the stuff to muddle mints in their apartment?
He's upscale. Yeah.
He's upscale.
He's not sleeping on the mats.
Yeah, I think I better hang. I'd rather hang out with Radar, to be honest with you. So you think it went wrong? It seems like they kind of found each other.
Well, they did, but it doesn't sound like it's a positive relationship. You know what I mean? So it's like in Sixers, you're getting the near miss on a relationship, and he goes off and gets married, and she just kind of goes back to her life, back to watching basketball. Where these two guys are together, but it sounds like it's not the greatest thing that they're together. You have that line. You have the line earlier in the song where he says, "Because pleasure's a rental, but pain's residential, and every garden is overgrown," which I think is a brilliant line, by the way. And then later on in the song, he's telling us that pleasure's a rental, and the terms aren't so simple, and any vessel can overflow, which lends itself to the drug part of the story. But like it feels like it's not going great for Radar and Lita. They're kind of, you know, they're together, but that's not necessarily a positive thing.
Here's an interesting question that I was wondering, just because they're sort of set in the same universe going into fan fiction. Do you think Lita works at the bakery from the understudies?
It's possible, I suppose.
Like, do we want to go that far? Like, can we draw that conclusion as like, here's fan fiction. Lita works at the bakery till she gets hooked.
Then it got closed down because it said she used to work at some store, but it's not there anymore because she stops going in. So
I like it. And to take that a step further, could Lita be the girl in Sixers? Because we don't know her name.
Right.
Like, does she try to go for the guy in Sixers and then wind up with Radar? I don't know.
Yeah. And is Radar back from the military, but an actor that she meets at the bakery?
All in all, I think my point is, like, while it does feel like the B-side to Death of a Punchline, like, this song had me thinking a lot more than Punchline did. And I like Punchline, but, like, I like this song for other reasons.
This one has a deep storyline, and maybe that's why it got cut. Maybe it was too much storyline for the album, yeah.
Well, and for you, Gasper, especially, you're the guy that loves the story. Like, we talk about it all the time. That's never a thing for me. But as we just sit here chatting amongst us, like, it could easily become, now it's not the Charlemagne story because that one is a separate, but is it a spinoff? Is it something else in that universe where maybe there was at one point a story, like you're saying, that was supposed to kind of carry through The Price of Progress, and maybe they changed their mind and maybe this was the linchpin song that would have made it too obvious, so they took it out just so the stuff could stand a little more as individual tracks as opposed to a concept-y thing.
I mean, I could see how that happens, but I also think, like, he had said he's consciously trying to write about older people with older people problems. And so he's getting away from the hood rats and going into people more our own age, his own age. So I don't know that these are necessarily tied together storylines. It's fun to kind of try to push that theory, but I think it's just, this is where his head's at. And so, you know, the similarities, I don't know that they're necessarily really kind of connected, but I will be the first to jump on that bandwagon if you'd like to get out some oak tag and some thread.
Well, I know you're all about that. So I think I'll just save it for the next Q&A if I could float a question in. That might be one to ask.
So talking about albums that should and should not make the final cut, I think you had a question for us on that, Kevin.
Well, it was interesting. I recently joined the Positive Posting Forum, as I've been told, and credit to Mark Woods in the group who posed a question the other day, which I thought was very interesting after the songs were released, in as much as he personally said he would have put Death of a Punchline and Radar and Lita in as part of the record of The Price of Progress. He liked them better than some of the songs. And if you had to remove two existing tracks, what would they be? And I thought that was a very interesting question because I do very much enjoy The Price of Progress, but are there songs I would take? And so for him, he said he would remove City at 11 and Distortions of Faith to put Death of the Punchline and Radar and Lita. And then down the line, a few other folks had chimed in. with their responses, some of which were very interesting. So I was just throwing that question, and credit to Mark for that cool idea. Do you feel the same, or are these songs where they should be? And if you had to make a change to Price of Progress, would it be one, both? What would you do?
Interesting. Mike, you go first.
Yeah, I can also give you some other suggestions, but I don't want to influence you. There's a few people had some other comments in response to his question.
Well, I just stand. Originally, I said, you know, I think they'll be on the 10-year anniversary of songs 11 and 12. That's where I like them. But if you're putting a gun to my head and forcing me in, I would Death of a Punchline for City at 11, because I think you're just kind of trading out one football gambling song for another one. But I do love City at 11. And then I'd go with Gasper's idea. I guess I would put Radar and Lita in with Sixers, because it's switch out the storylines maybe. But I love Sixers, so I wouldn't take either one of those songs off the album. So what do you got, Gasper?
So I kind of think I would take out Birdwatchers. And so I don't know if I would put in Death of a Punchline or Radar and Lita in its place. I think Death of a Punchline is a stronger song, and I would like to see it on the record. But interestingly enough, if you took out Birdwatchers and replaced it with Radar and Lita, it would follow Sixers. And then it would lend to my theory that the two songs are intertwined. So I don't know which one I would put in its place. But I am not a big fan of Birdwatchers. So I think that could go for either two songs.
It's funny because I agree with you on the Birdwatchers. I had seen some people suggest that one. There are a few people that really don't like Perdido and thought that would be one to go, which I just, you know, that's one of my favorites. I can't get my head around that. But, you know, everybody's got their own opinions, and that's what makes this fun. But I think for me, and as I said before, I don't think Radar and Lita is necessarily a favorite Hold Steady song. And I think if I didn't change the Price of Progress, I'd be fine with it. But if I was going to have the option to resequence it and add the Death of the Punchline, I would probably either lose the Birdwatchers or City at 11. I know a lot of people are saying Distortions of Faith, it's a little slower, but I just like the sort of weirdness of that song. And other people had selected Fly Over Halftime. I love Fly Over Halftime. I think that's a fun song, and I think it's a good way to end the record. The only way I would flip Fly Over Halftime for the Death of the Punchline is if I was going to just end the record with that upbeat song of the Death of the Punchline. But
right.
I'm with you, G. I think the Birdwatchers, I get it. It's a cool story. It's just not my favorite on the record. It's probably one I could skip. So if I was going to get a chance to add something beyond it, I would do
right
the Death of the Punchline there.
To me, it seems like Birdwatchers is the one that's most disconnected from the Hold Steady universe. Like, it doesn't feel based in the character-driven thing like the other songs are. And I think maybe that's why I would nix that one, but that's my own personal.
I love Birdwatchers, though. I know it's just maybe because it is a little different from the other songs.
Yeah. And look, City at 11 and the Death of the Punchline are very similar sonically. So it also, if you swap them, it probably doesn't really alter the record too much. But I think Distortions of Faith is just so different than everything else on the record that if you swap that, it would kind of almost feel a little sterile as an album. Like, it loses some of the dynamic because of how different Distortions of Faith is.
I think if we were having this conversation and Distortions of Faith were the B-side, I think we'd feel a little bit robbed of a good song on the record. I agree with you.
Yeah. But it was a very cool question. And, you know, like I said, reading the comments, there's a bunch of people could go on the group to see. But, you know, shout out to Chris Lang and Nick Roberts, Rob Sim, Jonas, Barry. Like, everybody had different opinions, and that's why it's fun to talk about this band the way we do. That was a good question. My way to pose it, Mark, and kind of gave us something to think about. Maybe I'll, you know what? Maybe we'll revisit it on the next one and see if my opinion changes. But I think at this point, with how much we've talked about the Price of Progress, I think we all have a pretty good grasp of where our gut lies on this one. Trading their medications, telling each other everything.
fine with talking about the band and these songs. Are we ready to move on to the next round of Diamonds in the Drain?
I mean, yeah, I think we have to. I know
it's been a couple episodes since we did a Diamonds in the Drain.
I know people were waiting. We had seen a couple of comments come through the last time, like, hey, no Diamonds in the Drain. So we had a long episode, thanks to Martin, and which we loved. And, you know, definitely I hope you guys checked out his book. Mine just showed up, so I haven't started it yet.
I'm still waiting for mine. I bought mine in hardcover copy, and I'm still waiting. It's coming in May.
I bought the soft cover. But
I ordered mine on Kindle, so it took like a hundredth of a second to get to me.
See?
All right, let's jump into Diamonds
in the Drain. Here we go.
There were diamonds in the drain.
All right, Mike, you want to explain the rules to us one last time? It's been a little bit.
Are there rules? Do we really have any rules with this show?
There's no rules. It's just a bunch of D's. We roll a dirty dozen 12-sided D&D dice for Diamonds in the Drain. Whatever it rolls is the track number. This round, we are comparing the very first three albums, speaking of deep storylines, and whatever track number comes up, we have to pick a gold, silver, and bronze, and there is absolutely no ties, and that's the part that makes it so difficult and so fun.
All right. Before we roll, Kev, do you want to remind us of the standings of the records right now?
I would be happy to. So we are three rounds in. So far, we've done track 3, track 5, and track 8. Recapping our totals as we've had them, Boys and Girls in America is up at the top with 19 total points. Separation Sunday is in second place with 17 points. And Almost Killed Me is in third place with 16 points. So that's where we're at totals across the three rounds we've done. Just a reminder, we've done track 3, track 5, and track 8. And let's roll the die and see what we get this time.
All right. And just to reiterate, we're giving out gold for first place, silver for second place, bronze for third place. Gold gets 3 points, silver 2, bronze 1.
Right? That is the rules.
All right. Let's roll the die and see what it says. 11. What do we got for track 11?
Ooh. I know mine.
Okay, so off Almost Killed Me, we got Milk Crate Mosh. So we're getting into the bonus tracks now with these.
Tough one because people are always clamoring for it. I think it's only some people have only ever heard it at the 20th anniversary show. So interesting. All right. How a Resurrection Really Feels off of Separation Sunday.
And then I'll just make it worse. Off of Boys and Girls in America, it is Southtown Girls. Take Glendale back to the south side. Take Nicolette out to the Vietnamese. Take Pan Am up to the north side. Take Lowry. So just to sum it up, so you have it all in one voice, mine. It's Milk Crate Mosh from Almost Killed Me, How a Resurrection Really Feels from Separation Sunday, and Southtown Girls from Boys and Girls in America. And as usual, we will have Mike go first.
Oh, why do you have to go first? This is just a killer one.
Because it's your game.
Your game.
It's my game.
You came up with it.
Okay. So, I mean... I know a lot of people have Resurrection as their favorite Hold Steady song overall. I'll have to give that the gold medal. It's just an amazing song. But then that means I have to give a silver to somebody, and that the fact that I'm giving Southtown Girls a silver just kills me. Kills me, because every time I drive through Bloomington, I say, Bloomington, what did they let them do to you? I just say that every time I go through Bloomington. Because Bloomington was such a, when I was a kid, it was the romantic place. It was where the Vikings played, where the Twins play. Now it's got the Mall of America there, but it's, you can see the cracks. It's starting to age. It's like Mary Tyler Moore. It used to be so cool. Now it's aging gracefully, shall we say. So that gets my silver medal. And then, for bronze, that leaves me with Milk Crate Mosh, which is a great, you know, one of our bonus tracks, one of the most requested live bonus tracks. But somebody has to get the bronze. And yeah, all these songs are too strong for what I gave them, but that's what I have to go with.
Wow. Wow. So that brings it to Gasper.
So, I mean, we say it every week. This is a tough one. This week especially is really a tough one. And I think that's just a testament to these three records. They really are, each in their own way, perfect records. So before I get crucified, all of these songs are favorite songs. I love each and every one of them. I am not saying that anyone is not a good song. But I'm pretty much going to agree with Mike. How do I not give Resurrection a gold medal when that's the ringtone on my phone, man? That's the song that I'm always waiting to hear at a Hold Steady show. That guitar riff kills me every time. It's a beloved song by everybody. It makes the shows. And my other criteria, it's, again, quintessential to the storyline. I mean, this is where you find out that, yeah, Holly was the hood rat that he's talking about in Your Little Hood Rat Friend. And it's what happens to Holly, and I love that song. It's hard to play Southtown Girls in a second. I mean, that song explodes at every show. It's played at every show. I think that's probably one of the few songs that is played at every show. I know it's a favorite of Kevin, so he's just sitting there giving me dirty looks, but compared to Resurrection, I got to give it the silver, and that leaves Milk Crate Mosh for the bronze. And it's ironic because I was at the 20th anniversary show, and I think I remember texting the two of you, like, they're playing Milk Crate Mosh. Like, it's such a huge moment.
You did.
I mean, I know, I'm pretty sure Kat told me, like, she has yet to hear that song live, and she's been to a ton of shows. Like,
yeah, you were drunk texting because I think it said Milk Crate Posh.
Yeah, well, something like
that. Yeah, well, what else
fat,
is new?
I have fat fingers. Leave me alone.
He blames the fingers, but it's really his inability to spell.
I mean, so that's where I lie, and now we're going to kick it to Kevin, where you can change all the scores here. But
well, I mean, I think it's pretty apparent. First off, I love how Resurrection really feels, even though it is your ringtone, and I've spent many a night in a bar with you subjecting us to it at 3 in the morning. So that will lose the gold status for that reason alone.
It's my fault.
It is your fault. So otherwise it would have been a clean sweep, but I give How a Resurrection Really Feels my silver. Just because it's still a great song and it is a favorite, but we said this one was going to be tough, and I hate that I'm going to put Milk Crate Mosh to a bronze, but at least we're all in agreement on that. I think we get it, but I've said it countless times. Southtown Girls is one of the songs I love to see live. It's, for me, it's not about the overall story. It's about the vibe when you see it and when you're there in the room. And that song, like you said, it's almost played at every show. It's like sequestered in Memphis level, where it's just always in the set list. And the very a cappella intro, it kills. And I love it. It's my favorite from this batch, and not like it's a big gradient. Like, they're all super close to each other. It's literally hairs apart, as you guys were saying. But for me, Southtown Girls is my goal. Which brings us to the totals. And I will say that the big winner this week is you guys, and your How a Resurrection Really Feels comes through with a solid 8 points total. for the week. So that's our gold winner. Southtown Girls comes in second with 7 points. And then Milk Crate Mosh falls to third with the bronze with 3 points this week.
It just feels wrong.
It is wrong. But that's what happens when we let you guys make choices. So now to upgrade the totals, just because they're here and we're talking about it, that puts Almost Killed Me at bronze total with 19 points. That puts Separation Sunday in second place with 25 points. And it puts Boys and Girls in America in gold with 26 points. It's literally a 1 point difference between.
All right. And how many tracks do we have left?
Well, is it 11 total, 12 total?
12 total.
Record?
We've done
so
four,
we still have eight to go.
So it's still anybody's game.
Yes, we are 33% of the way through for all you fraction people. That's what we do.
And
wow.
I'm going to put a poll up on the usual places, the Facebook group and Spotify and Twitter. And if you vote, we'll give a couple people a shout out, because I know a couple people leave some comments and they do some interesting voting. And we'll kind of give you a shout out on the next episode. Bleaching out the blood stains, she's got diamonds in the drain. She said that she was coming, but she mostly just made hard, fast noises. It kind of sounded like the locusts. We kind of did it, right? This is our episode. So this was a fun one. It was a good one to get through. We had a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm still kind of reeling a little bit from you guys giving Southtown Girls both silvers. I mean, I adore that song.
You know what? I'm going to remind you of that when we're at Massive Nights and they play it and they don't play How Resurrection Really Feels that night. And I'm going to be like, your gold song's on the cutting room floor and my gold is right here in all its glory. Thank you. But if you like what we do, give us a like, a follow, tell your friends. We enjoy doing this. We're glad you guys check it out and listen. We've seen the numbers go up every episode. So really, thank you all for the support and the comments and the shares. Really, it's we do this because we enjoy it. We enjoy talking about the Hold Steady and talking to the scene. And the fact that you guys follow us really means a lot. So give us a like, a follow. Gaspar, why don't you tell them where they can find us on socials?
So you can find our socials and past episodes and anything Hood Rat Recap at our Linktree, which is linktr.ee/TheHoodRatRecap. And if you wanted to leave us a voice message, like maybe tell us why we're wrong about Milk Crate Mosh or something, where would we do that, Mike?
In the show notes, there's a link you can click and just click it and speak right into it on your phone and you will hear your lovely voice on the next episode. And I just wanted to tell everybody we are now available on YouTube, just regular old fashioned YouTube. And don't worry, you don't get to see our talking heads. We all have the perfect face for podcasting, so you don't have to watch us. It's a still photo, but you can listen to the whole episode if that makes it easier to have your YouTube browser open at work and you can pretend to have your spreadsheets open or whatever annoying thing your boss has you doing. So. Oh, once again, I just wanted to thank Dave McCabe. I think I forgot to say his last name. So Dave was McCabe from Kansas City, sent us the excellent email on the fan fiction, leaving us a great question. So everybody, if you have any answers to the fan fiction question, get those into us. And then Gaspar, everybody comes on this podcast to listen to your expertise on the Hold Steady. But let's say they wanted to listen to your expertise on, let's say, the Muppets. Is there somewhere they could go to do that?
It just so happens there is, actually. Myself and the one and only Heather with the henna on her hands joined our good friend, Stage Right Mike, and his partner Brian on the 70s vs. 80s podcast. And we did a whole episode about the Muppets. It was a lot of fun. So thank you guys for having us on that show. And please go check that out. Where could they find that, Mike?
Yeah, Little Birdie told me that podcast is available on the exact same player that you're listening to this podcast on. It's the 70s versus the 80s.
All right. All right. Well, I'm Gaspar. That's Kevin. And that's Mike. And us guys, and all you guys and gals, we are all the Hood Rat Recap. The killer party sucks. What those girls rules. Thank you, Mike. Hey, Mike, so a lot of people don't know this, but you found a AI version of Craig Finn, Robot Craig, and did a little interview with him. So why don't we play some of that?
All right, let's do it. I mean, I was up working on him all night, just programming, trying to get him to work. So I haven't tested him out, so I think this is the perfect time to test him out right on the show here. So, okay.
Go for it.
So here's go. I got to put his glasses on. He looks weird without his glasses. Okay, so it's Robot Craig.
Hey, it's Craig Finn.
So, Craig, you know, baseball season started and the Twins aren't doing that great, but, you know, everybody thinks they have a good team this year. You've been wearing your Minnesota Twins hat all over Europe and, you know, and they don't even know what baseball is over there, but the Minnesota Twins are your favorite team. Do you think they have a chance to actually do it? Do you think they can actually win the whole World Series this year?
We should probably make a wish now.
Okay, that's fair enough. I guess that is a big wish. But you know, when I was a kid, the Minnesota Twins actually won the World Series, and it's been like over 30 years since they won it. So, you think if they win, what do you think? How do you think the Twin Cities would react?
That's a baby, don't you worry about a couple broken windows. That's just what it looks like when we're joyful. Crowding in the bathrooms and tipping over tables. That's just what it looks like when we're joyful.
Yeah, I guess you're right, Craig. That would get pretty crazy. But, you know, they have Carlos Correa on their team, and Carlos Correa is like one of the best players in the whole league. And he could have signed millions of dollars more to play for like the Yankees, or he could have played for Kevin's New York Mets for millions of dollars more. But he signed for a lot less money to play for the Twins. How do you think Carlos feels about that?
Now Carlos is crying. Carlos is crying.
Yeah, I guess I should have seen that reaction coming. I had a feeling you were going to say that, Craig. But Craig, if the Twins did win the World Series, you know, we know the parade would start either at the stadium or at the Capitol, but where do you think the World Series parade would end at? I mean, there would be millions of people there. Where do you think it would end at?
We all come down and drown in the Mississippi River.
Drown? That's quite a commitment. But I'm sorry, guys. I guess I still got to work on this thing. I was working on this thing all night, and I thought I had it nailed down. It's just I'm going to have to plug. I'm going to get my soldering gun out. Maybe I'll plug my soldering gun in this time. I don't know why that helps because it's all programming. But, you know, sorry.